You are listening to Season 1, Episode 2 of the new Pendragon Variety Podcast, roundtable discussion podcast for aspiring writers of genre fiction. We're happy to introduce our hosts, Adrian, Rosemary, Scribby, and me, Scribe.
All of your different characters have very different personalities, have very different perspectives on the world around them. And because of that, they're going to appeal to different people. So everyone's going to have characters that they like and characters that they don't like. And so you're going to appeal to a wide variety of people as opposed to a small story where they're like, I don't like this person and there are no other options.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I think going along with that, I really like large casts simply because you have so much room for story. The idea is that, you know, if you've got a main love interest and the main love interest, and the two of them are, say, fighting with each other, the reader is not stuck having to wait for them to get the hell over it and get back together. We have other people to follow. And I think that, you know, even when our main character overcomes a lot of what he's facing, there are other people surrounding him that still have potential stories. So, I mean, a lot of the reasons I like big casts in any genre, in fiction, in movies, in television, whatever, is that it does allow a lot more versatility when it comes to the stories.
Also, yeah, I think it creates tension through withheld knowledge. So, for example, if one character has a piece of knowledge that they are willingly withholding from another character who either needs that knowledge or should know that knowledge, or shouldn't know that knowledge, it creates tension for the other characters.
Yes. Also, if you've got multiple perspectives going on, then what you can do as a writer is have something, you know, you can do mini cliffhangers for things and just switch to someone else's perspective for a while, and the reader is kind of going, but it's, you know, if you do that well, it's kind of awesome.
Right.
I would say you have to be careful with that, because I can't count the number of books where I've been like, okay, now I can skip to his next chapter and see what happens to him, and then I'll go back and read these other people.
I've definitely done that.
You are a sick, sick puppy.
I try not to do that, but I have found myself doing that before.
Yeah, I don't, like, some cliffhangers can be really touchy. Like, they can work, but also they can be, like, just too much. Especially because I've read some authors that like to leave every single character to cliffhanger every time. Yeah. That's how they pull you back again. But it's just too much.
Right. It's like trying to watch a K-drama.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, it's also interesting
because you have to watch from middle to middle.
Mm-hmm.
You can evolve your character. Sometimes you have a character and their storyline just heads in a certain direction and there's nothing you can do about it. It's just the way it's meant to be. And I think the example I'm thinking of is Will Grayson. In that, you start off reading about two perspectives, both from boys named Will Grayson. And at the beginning of the novel, most people really like one Will's chapters and are just kind of vaguely getting through the other Will's chapters. And by the end of the book, both of the Wills have evolved enough that I ended up at least flip-flopping that view, that the first Will, because that's just the way his story went. His story had to go in this direction, and it went in a direction that, like, you know, if it had only been the one Will story and we only saw from his perspective and we only followed his path, the ending would be really disappointing. It's just kind of like, and he realizes all this stuff he did was kind of wrong and now he's done. It's like, okay.
I think
you have characters to kind of keep it going works well.
I think we also have to figure out what is large cast, because I don't consider two points of view a large cast story.
Right.
I would consider it a pretty small cast story.
Well,
large
there
cast
are lots of characters, but my point is that you need more than, as opposed to a book that follows one person, and while you see other characters, it's really his story.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I consider anything that's beyond just the whole "this is Joe and this is his story" as kind of a large cast.
I think of large cast story as like four or five main characters or perspectives or more.
I think more than three, more than two, actually more than two points of view is a large cast story in my opinion.
Yeah, for me it's got to be like four plus.
All right. Are we looking at just points of view, or are we also looking at the number of side characters? But say only one or two points of view.
Yeah, see, I was looking at number of characters.
I think it's a combination of both. I think it depends on how many really, really vital characters there are. How many, I would say story characters. It's not like all the characters in the story aren't in the story, but, you know, there are lots of little side characters in just about anything, as there should be, but story characters are those characters that are going to move something, are going to have their own plot point, whether they have a perspective or not, are going to push something forward or make a change in the story, whether they have their own perspective or not. And I think it's a combination of multiple perspectives and a lot of these story characters.
I would consider a large cast story in terms of perspective a little bit easier to talk about in terms of a podcast.
Yeah.
It's a little bit easier to define something as large cast if you have a large number of perspectives.
Yeah. When I think big cast stories, two books pop into mind, The Good and the Bad. The Bad being, of course, Robert Jordan. We've all been over this a million times. And the awesome version being Game of Thrones, Song of Ice and Fire. And those are the first two things that pop into my head as like the epitome of big cast stories, the way to do it right and the way to do it wrong.
See, now, I haven't managed to finish Song of Ice and Fire. Or I haven't managed to finish Game of Thrones, even. I think I've been through it once, but I had a hard time tracking who was who in some of the cases, like the nobles all kind of blended together in the one continent for me.
Yeah, that is a definite con to large casts.
And I didn't have as much of a problem with that, like separating out major characters in Wheel of Time.
And I was the opposite.
Mm-hmm. Although, I think that definitely in the Song of Ice and Fire, what I read of it, it looks like an effort is made to, keep important characters to the fore and unimportant characters to the back.
Yes, and very much so.
Less of that in Robert Jordan, because he goes, oh, that's a really interesting character. You know, nobody knows about their backstory. I think they should have
it seems to me that Robert Jordan, and they sort of ran wild, and ultimately it got to the point where the stories could not progress because there were so many perspectives that you'd have a 700-page novel with. He doesn't make it seem awkward when he makes that switch.
One of the cons that I can see, that I have seen through reading some big cast stories or some stories that do harness other characters to show different sides of a conflict or to give exposition in some way, is that I find it very difficult to sympathize with characters that quickly. For example, I was reading an omnibus version of a story, and the omnibus was titled Rogue Angel. I don't remember who the author was, but I started reading, and the initial perspective was a woman who is an archaeologist, and it was very interesting and very fast-paced, and I was reading it and enjoying it, and then it switched over into the perspective of another character, and that was fine, and I started reading that, and I was putting my faith in the writer that this character would be an important character. And then we switched over to yet a third character. Okay, and I started putting my faith in that, in the fact that that character would be important. By the seventh perspective I got through in the first 100 pages, I just couldn't do it anymore, and I put it down. We occasionally went back to that first character, but for me, I looked at it and I saw what the author was trying to do in giving you every bit of exposition from the perspective of somebody who could show it rather than just telling us. And sometimes, okay. Sometimes you do want to choose tell over show, and this is when. So one of the cons of big cast stories is I actually put it down in the middle of one of the chapters of the seventh perspective person because I just didn't feel like going on. So you do run the risk of losing people's interests. And I think a lot of people had that problem with the Two Towers, because the Two Towers is set up in three big chunks following each section of characters, and it doesn't flip-flop back and forth. Yeah, so anybody who doesn't like one of those segments might put the book down.
Yeah. Yeah, there's such a thing as too much and not giving your reader enough time to learn to care. And that's just like everything else we talk about in writing. It's a matter of, can you pull it up?
It's very, very dense.
I know from personal experience, I tend to create large cast worlds. My current novel that I'm working on is large cast. The novel before it that I was planning on doing was extremely large cast. I try to think of individual character stories, and ultimately, as I add stuff into the story, characters keep popping out. Maybe just because I'm a character person first, so they just don't stop coming. But it is difficult. It's difficult to figure out when one perspective is needed over another. It's difficult to figure out if they're all coming across the way you want. It's difficult to figure out sometimes when to switch or who should be giving the current story and who shouldn't. And it can be very difficult to juggle timelines. I just recently had to completely outline my timeline on graph paper, with one block being one day. Even if they're traveling for like a month, I've got 30 little blank days with a line saying traveling, because I realized that my timeline, like, I had people popping in and out of places where they couldn't be, and all sorts of insanity.
Keeping track of a large cast story is challenging. From a writing perspective, it's also, I think, more challenging to write a larger cast story, because you do have to sort of switch gears when you move into another character's perspective. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that can actually be really good. So for me, sometimes once I finish with one character, the excitement of getting to switch to another character is enough. Sometimes, though, it's harder to shift my mind into somebody else's head.
Yeah.
One of the things I really love about multiple perspectives is the ability to see the voice changed. You know, not just the talking changing, but how each individual character observes and receives the world around them. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, is one of the big challenges for authors. If it's not, it should be. You know, the ability to not just change their own perspectives, but change perspectives between multiple points of view. And, you know, really, really change filters.
Right.
And so I think that is often, like, if I read a story where I can really immerse myself in not just one point of view, but several, and it's done well and I can see the changes, it's really exciting to me.
Right, and I think that's one of the positive things about being able to write a large cast story, is that you do get the experience of working with several different characters, and sometimes that can be challenging, as Adrian said, in terms of keeping track of them in a timeline, but it can also be really rewarding in terms of feeling like you've created several different characters who each serve their own purpose and carry their own weight in the story. Thus far, I have written one large cast story and one single perspective. And the challenges inherent in both are very different. So, for example, in the Mark Masters trilogy, sometimes one character would be giving me a lot of trouble because I wouldn't exactly know how they would respond emotionally to a situation, because I would be stuck in the mode of another character.
Okay.
But when I was writing the single cast story, sometimes I wished that I could just write a scene from someone else's point of view just to show from the outside how the character seems mm-hmm. to others.
Right.
So do you guys see any more pitfalls of writing on the writing side of large cast stories?
You have to be very, very, very on top of your characters, because otherwise you're going to start to feel like, well, these characters all have different names and different hair colors and different backgrounds, but they're ultimately like a clone army of drones. And you have to watch out for that, because no one wants clones rampaging over your pages. So you've got to be able to have that very unique feel to every character, or they need to go.
There's also nothing worse than having a character strung through half the novel, and then it's almost like the author forgets about him. Like, I don't know if you guys have had that character, but when you're reading, and they never go back, and you reach the last page, and you're like, wait, we left her standing in a building, and... If you're going to have a ton of characters, you have to make sure that you don't drop anyone. And that would be my major fear, is that I'd get to the end of my book and be like, all right. And then realize that I left Velma standing in a church.
Yeah. Going, where's my groom?
Where's my groom? He just never showed up.
Yeah. And I've seen people do that, get halfway through and just stop.
It always happens to my favorite character. They fall off a cliff, and then we're like, okay, we'll come back and make sure he's okay. And then they never do.
The author just, you know, wanted to let you down lightly and know they did not survive that fall off the cliff.
Well, the worst is when they're like, I'm going to go into town and see if I can get help, and they never come back. And you think, is there a sequel to this that's going to be like the zombie apocalypse going on? I mean, why didn't she ever come? And really, she never came back because, you know, while she was gone, the hero got attacked, and then he was kidnapped and taken to another country, and he solved his problem from there and found the girl of his dreams in the castle. And you're going, but wait, poor Susan came back and you were gone.
Actually, I am guilty of that.
Yeah, you are. Ooh, no, I don't remember that.
About the fifth, I left off a character. I left Bay, having gotten captured by the bad guys.
Oh, that's right, you did.
Yeah.
And then didn't go back to him for about the last quarter of the book. The last quarter of the book was entirely Ariana and Shira's perspective. And I did that, I mean, it's a trilogy, so I did that at the end of the first book, knowing that he would be the first character I got back to in the second book. However, when I received some notes from an agent, and one of the things that she mentioned that I needed to revise was Bay's point of view, because I had only three points of view, so it was actually extremely obvious. And what I thought was leaving him in a hard situation and therefore creating tension was actually more like just completely dropping a thread instead. So that's another thing that you have to be careful of. I ended up taking some of what I had planned for him from the second book and moving it to the first book, which made it a little longer, but actually ended up serving me very well because I could create more tension at the ending. Large cast stories, pros.
Large cast stories are good because they give you the chance to see things happening from multiple perspectives. They can add a lot of interest. They can add a lot of new content to your story and really make it richer and more fulfilling. Large cast stories can be bad because you can lose track of the characters. They can all sort of blend into each other. They can get out of control and grow like kudzu to the point where you never get anything done. Let's see, anything else?
I think no kudzu characters is what I'm going to take away from this whole discussion. Just say no to kudzu.
Because your fifth main character's Aunt Patricia, even though she had a major effect upon him when he was five that developed him as a character, the character we know now, is not really important enough to warrant her own chapter.
Well, mm-hmm. Don't hate on Aunt Patricia.
And if she is, please don't leave Aunt Patricia standing in the middle of the woods waiting, just waiting for anyone to come back for her.
All right. So,
The Flash Pulp Podcast. 3 to 10 minutes of fiction brought to you thrice weekly. Now it's 3 apocalypses in one.
Yeah!
Suffering from tough, stuck-on humans? Well, 20 hellish hours of suffocation in the all-encompassing web of Karwick the Spider God will get them right out. Too many brains lying around? The ravenous mouths surrounding zombie-fighting Ruby will quickly clean those up. Nosy neighbors? Infect them with the murder plague, and watch as they dissolve into paranoid maniacs bent on the preemptive assassination of their friends and family. Why stop at one end of the world when you can have all three? You can find them all at flashpulp.com or search for them on iTunes.
I figure recently we're all primarily fantasy buffs, so yeah. I figured I'd mix it up a little bit and give, Altered Carbon by Richard K. Morgan is the first book in a trilogy, and they're kind of like science fiction, cyberpunk, noir detective novels.
So they are basically everything but fantasy.
Yes. The name of the trilogy is the Takeshi Chovacs novels. Takeshi Chovacs being the main character, obviously. Okay. And he is, to just give a little bit, he is an ex-envoy. And an envoy is a term for a special sort of people. In this world, we have traveled across the stars. But obviously he's stuck very realistically to physics principles, which is you can't actually travel faster than light. But they have learned how to digitize the human consciousness, soul. So everyone has this, what's called Stax, in the back of their head, which is basically the computer chip that is them. And bodies are just called sleeves. Ooh. And people, if they're killed, obviously they'll remember being killed, they'll feel being killed, but then their stack can be pulled out and they can be re-sleeved.
It's like Dollhouse.
The envoys are a specific group of sort of special soldiers that have gone through rigorous training to be able to handle the re-sleeving process, because it kind of drives most people a little wonky having to adjust to a new body. Mm-hmm. And they're mentally trained. They can be dropped into any and all situations and assimilate the culture around them. They have what's called envoy intuition, kind of put together pictures of what's going on around them. Because the idea was, if a war starts on a planet somewhere, the government can't just send soldiers there, because by the time the soldiers get there, it'll be like 200 years later and the war will be done. Mm. So the envoys were designed to be able to be, to have their digitized stacks instantly needle casted to the planet and dropped into sleeves, and bam, you've got an army on planet surface.
Oh, that's creepy.
He wow. is ex-envoy, and now he's kind of a mercenary criminal detective.
This sounds like a character that Ijin Kee should play.
And each of the books is a fairly separate story, other than the fact that the previous books are now in Chovacs's past. There's not a lot of tie together between them. And all of this is against a backdrop in which there was an ancient Martian civilization that no one knows about, but there are artifacts and ruins and stuff on some of the planets that he ends up being at, and no one really knows anything about them. But the reason that humanity was able to take such great leaps technologically was because they found and were able to decode some of these old artifacts and get, like, star maps and stuff. Really interesting. science, Richard K. Morgan is the name of the author.
Okay.
And I have the Kindle versions of his books.
Okay, so these are e-books. Are they also in print?
Yes, they are.
What the fuck?
What the fuck?
What the fuck?
What the fuck?
So today's What the Fuckery is brought to you by www.fanfiction.net.
Not the link I hoped we'd ever, ever, ever put on this podcast.
It can go in the What the Fuckery section. Oi. Well, no, no, no. I mean, I admit, and you have to admit, that we were both, in our high school years, on fanfic.net.
I don't have to admit to anything.
Well, I am outing you. Right. But we were never, ever, ever, ever on this particular frightening section of fanfic.net.
That has recently been brought to our attention.
The Bible section of fanfic.net. And not just the Bible section of fanfic.net. If you go there, you have the option of changing the rating to rated M stories.
It's horrifying.
And they're there. I mean, they're there.
That's just horrifying.
And some of them are clearly supposed to be jokes. They're clearly supposed to be satirical or Bible bashing, but some of them look like they're just legitimate.
My soul.
Please tell me where there's a Bible crossover with My Little Pony.
Okay. Jesus and Hitler, a romance. And yes, this is rated M. With Jesus and Hitler slash fic.
It hurts.
How many kinds of wrong is that?
Every kind of wrong on the planet.
Ooh, so here's one. Noah and the Bestial Ark and a Big Boat.
Oh, God. No, no.
I believe when I was looking at titles on there in shock horror,
David
I saw
and Goliath.
Jonas and the Whale, wink, wink.
Jonah and the Whale. Jonah disobeys God and pleasures himself to a whale. Read all about it.
Oh, my God.
David and Goliath. David is ordered by the King Jew to kill some Philistine booty. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Horrifying.
There's horrifying and then there's horrifying.
Yeah, there's horrifying. There's just mildly funny, which is, there's Bible fanfiction. And then there's horrifying, which is the rated M Bible fanfiction. Oh, there's White Wolf crossover.
Those lovely Pendragon
ladies. What's up with you guys?
Adrian, you first.
Not a whole lot. I just, a few days ago, finished writing a short story.
Yay.
That I'm very proud of.
I saw that. It was so good. So amazing.
I actually, this morning, took it off of my blog because I'm going to try to find an anthology or magazine. Let's see what else.
How about your book?
My book, the most recent thing I did was the timelining, and I did like research on how long travel takes by foot, by wagon, by horseback, and did a map on graph paper where a square is roughly a day of horse travel, and did intense timelines where one sheet of graph paper is each month. And they're color-coded by character. And I've been doing some brainstorming because I've gotten to a point in my book where it did something I didn't expect it to. And I'm trying to figure out where it goes from there. But it's been a really, really, really busy time of year for me. So I haven't had a lot of time.
Yeah, we brainstormed some last night on one of your issues.
And it was very helpful.
That is good. Yeah, sometimes things happen in your book that you don't exactly expect, or you feel like you need to go one way, and it sometimes does take an outside perspective going, well, why not just do this, to make you go, well, I didn't have it. Well, it, but it, well, I guess I can do that.
Exactly.
There really isn't any reason why I shouldn't do that.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's just not the way you think of it.
In your head, you're like, that could never happen. And then you're like, why not? And you're like, because
it'd be too easy. Yeah. But no, that happens quite a bit. But yeah. So it was interesting to finally see one of you guys get to that point. It made me kind of click my fingers together in a Mr. Burns fashion and go, excellent. So, Sammy. Sorry. So, Rosemary, how about you? How is your writing going?
Writing. Well, I have exciting news in that I now have a title as a writer, but it's doing nonfiction. Well,
that's fine.
It's
still writing.
Yes. So I'm going to be learning to write scenarios for an ethical education company. And it's really, really exciting. And I think it's really going to help me. I've recently had the idea that I should use this sort of system in the background to plot out what ethical perspectives my characters are looking through in order to give me an insight into how they kind of view the world and things. Even if they're not particularly ethical, I could even do this with the bad guys and see what sort of blind spots they've got and where they're living in that area. So
that's an interesting way to do things. It sounds like you could probably use that to work with your themes as well. I mean, you are very interested in ethics in general, so I think that might be a great way for you to work a theme, or a great thing for you to work a theme around is some kind of ethical issue.
Yes, and I, you know, I tend to do that with my writing anyway. I tend to moralize heavily, which annoys the heck out of me because it usually comes across as almost Aesop's fable kind of heavy.
Moral of the story.
And so that's bad when you're trying to write an enjoyable novel that, you know, doesn't leave people feeling like they've been hit over the head with the, you know, ethics club. So,
right.
I need to figure out how to be more subtle about that, because that's part of my problem is this is right and this is wrong. End of story.
Yeah. And I guess maybe one thing that you can do is make sure that it's inherent in your character's voice and not necessarily in the actions of the story or in the plot itself, or that it doesn't end up falling some way that all the bad guys are punished and all the good guys are heroes.
Right. I need to,
there's got to be some variation.
Less instant karma.
Right. Instant karma. Just add water. Well, cool. How about your fiction?
Yeah.
Have you been doing much fiction lately?
I haven't been able to get myself to say, actually, kind of. I don't know if writing hymns for fictional deities in D&D counts, but I totally did that.
I think it counts.
I'm playing two clerics right now in different settings.
Right.
And I have written hymns, a hymn for each of them.
Right. It's funny, because we actually got a comment the other day by Nobilis Reed, who said that some of us might be more, like, some of us might be right for writing Dungeons and Dragons or tabletop gaming fiction or things like that, or some of the actual just gaming scenarios and things like that. And I wonder if you wouldn't like trying that.
I have considered it. I'm working right now on learning to DM and take a pre-gen and sort of modify it a little bit. And I'm going to see if I like doing that and I'm successful at that. I think I might do it more heavily and then, and try that direction. Part of my problem is that I try to control everything way too much. I want everything. So I don't allow a lot of, you know, places where characters need to grow in a direction that I haven't foreseen.
Mm-hmm.
I end up getting stuck because I don't allow it to happen.
Right.
Until, you know, unless the character jumps up and down on my head and says, excuse me, I don't get.
Yeah. So I have been taking the past 2 weeks off forcibly from revising Hellhound. As soon as NaNoWriMo was over, I basically just forced myself to stop and back up, because I was having a lot of trouble balancing and weaving together all the different threads and being able to really see my story with all the changes that I'd made to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I needed to crystallize a few things, and I needed to cut a few things. And so actually backing up and giving myself some time away from that manuscript so that I can sort of gain a more complete understanding of what I think in my head right now the story should be, and then going back to it to see what it is right now and therefore what I need to change. Because I got about 20,000 new words on it.
Nice.
And that's and it is actually, even though I cut quite a bit, it is actually over what the original word count was.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I've added a bad guy. I've added a couple of other characters as well, taken out a few, and some of them have found roles that I didn't actually think they would. And I'm really excited about it, but at the same time, a little bit nervous. So I'm taking a step back to see if I can gain any clarity on what I need to do with it. So in taking that step back from the larger piece, I've actually been revising an old piece that I wrote, which we'll be podcasting here on Pendragon Variety as an extra. Got some great voice talent for it, so I'm really excited.
I saw the postings about that. I'm really excited to hear it.
It should be fun. I've got a good friend who is going to be doing the post-production for me, who is actually a professional sound engineer. So that's really exciting.
That's awesome.
And I'm also currently studying the short story form.
I can't wait to see it.
Reading short stories. Yeah, if you guys, if you don't like short stories... I mean, I was convinced I didn't like short stories. And I started reading a book called Naked City, which is an anthology of short stories edited by Agent Ellen Datlow. And it has some big name authors in there like Jim Butcher, Patricia Briggs, Holly Black. And some of the stories are really fun. I'm about a third of the way through it, and I'm thoroughly enjoying it. And I've already had several ideas for short stories. One of which is Mark Masters trilogy related.
Ha ha ha. Yeah, see, that's something you can do with large cast characters. When you've got a character that you want to really play with, but they just don't actually fit within the structure of your novel, and they would be, you know, sort of taking up space you need. You could decide to do a short story of them, you know, in some random anthology.
Pendragon Variety is a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Work 3.0 United States license. That means you can share it, you just can't change its name to Fabio and call it yours. Actually, if you did that, it might be kind of funny, but we'd still hunt you down with pickaxes and leave you speared to a picket fence as we tossed our podcast into a fireman's hold and hauled it back home, flowing tresses and all. If you'd like to send us feedback, you can email us at pendragonvariety@gmail.com, find us on the Pendragon Variety Facebook page, on Twitter as @LadiesPendragon, or leave a comment on our website at www.pendragonvariety.com. For more information about the music and other work heard in this podcast, you can visit www.pendragonvariety.com and look at our music and authors page.